Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
you. This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's Monday night, December 10th. We're here to talk about the Constitution. We're here to talk about liberty. We're here to talk about the America we all know and love. It's going away pretty fast. Hey, listen, over the weekend, Boehner and Barack Obama had some secret private talks. They came out of the talks and they suggested that the lines of communication were still open. However, both sides today insist that they seem to be stuck. And it looks like, to me, on January 1st, because the president refuses to agree to hold down the taxes on middle-class Americans, that those taxes will, in fact, go up. The president has been offered plenty of opportunity to keep those taxes down for you middle-class Americans where they are now, for you small business owners, keep those taxes down where they are now. He insists that those taxes go up on January 1, so I believe that, in fact, they will do so. Meanwhile, we continue to borrow 46 cents of every dollar we spend. We're sitting on a national debt of $16 trillion and growing fast, and the date now that President Barack Obama is looking at to have to borrow more money if he's going to continue to pay just the current bills has moved up to February 3rd. So by February 3rd, he will be standing up in front of us threatening to cut off Social Security checks and soldiers' pay if the Congress doesn't give him a debt ceiling increase. Interestingly, one of the conditions that he wants to be put in place before he will agree to maintain the current level of taxes on middle-class Americans and not let them go up is that he be given unfettered access to debt, to increasing the debt, and that Congress just step out of the way and do away with this silly notion that they do control the purse strings and that they would have to suggest to him what the debt ceiling would be. This guy has no respect for the Constitution, and he just continues on a dangerous path that surely is going to drive us over the fiscal cliff. Meanwhile, the Republican purge continues in the United States House of Representatives, where Boehner, the standard bearer for conservatives, I don't know, so he says, is purging constitutionalists from every possible committee, especially from any committee that would have any say about fiscal responsibility, and staffing those committees with hard left-wing Republicans like himself who are willing to spend anything for anything. The secession movement goes on. I had a very, very good Sunday afternoon. My friend Eric Ferris started his radio show. It was his debut performance down there on 106.3. Now that show, if you go to WZRK.com, you'll get that radio station. It's a radio station in Branson. I happen to be in the listening area, so I got to hear it. If you're not in the listening area, you missed it. So go to WRZK.com and keep checking there every day. I understand that by next week they will have live streaming up and ready so that you can catch that show wherever in the state, for that matter, wherever in the world you are. And it's a good show. Eric's did a good job with secession and talked a little bit about micronations. Pretty funny stuff. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty solid show. I'm looking forward to it. So check that out on Sunday afternoons at 4 o'clock or right after the Rams football game, whichever comes later. His time slot there is 4 to 6. I'm guessing if Rams football was over well before 4 and they still didn't put him on till 4. So I'm guessing that after Rams football means if Rams football goes over, they'll cut into his time slot. But as long as Rams football is done by 4, he'll be on from 4 to 6. Okay, we left our Constitution 101 is what we're working on now and for the foreseeable future. What we hope to do is lay the groundwork for the Constitution. You know, too often we have these talks, and I've been engaged in one with some conservatives for the last 3 or 4 days here, where people are really confused about what the Constitution is and does and says the federal government can and can't do. What the Constitution really is seems to be misunderstood by a lot of people. And part of the problem is that when we try to discern what the Constitution is all about, we do so in the rearview mirror. That is, we do so looking back from today backwards at the Constitution and what it, and from there we determine. You know, I've heard people say, well, because the Supreme Court said so. Well, I'm sorry, but the Supreme Court didn't decide what the Constitution was and meant and said. A convention in Philadelphia did that some many, many, many years ago. The Constitution has been perverted along the way, and the problem is when we look backwards at that, what we're trying to do is we're trying to, instead of looking ahead to where roads diverge and things get polluted, we're trying to look backwards and roads converge toward the original intent of the Constitution, and we get somewhat confused at the crossroads, and so it becomes easy to just say, well, where is the constitutional right to this, or where is the constitutional right to that, or as one fellow said this week, that something somewhere in the Constitution that gives the Congress the right to make laws outside the Constitution, and this is a conservative, so. And God bless him, it just is a matter of our current perspective. Looking back at 230 years of distortion and pollution of the Constitution, and we just don't get it right. So what we've done instead is we went back, we spent the first week, if you'll remember, defining the difference between conservatism and liberalism and libertarianism. And what we did was we just quickly tracked those ideologies backwards, and we showed how we got today to a totally changed version of conservatism, a totally contaminated version of liberalism. But then we showed that libertarianism, and I mean true ideological libertarianism, the libertarianism of Thomas Jefferson, of Patrick Henry, of Benjamin Franklin, of George Washington, that libertarianism has remained fairly unchanged through the centuries. And that libertarianism is what we can look to when we look to what the Constitution is, what it says, what it does, and what it meant. Now, we don't need the Supreme Court. We don't need a bunch of constitutional scholars. We don't need a bunch of constitutional law classes to tell us what the intent of the Founding Fathers was. They kept copious notes during the debates at the convention. There are the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. There are literally thousands and thousands of pages of writing before, during, and after the writing of this great document. And so we really don't need any help in deciphering what the original intent was, in deciphering what the founders wanted to do with the Constitution. And when we decide that we need those things, that's where we start contaminating the whole process. I mean, imagine with me that for a full decade, the Supreme Court argued back and forth about whether or not there was a right to privacy in the Constitution. And just close your eyes and wrap your arms around that one thing, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. So anyway, we did that the first week. In the second week, then, we brought some settlers to Jamestown, and then we brought some other settlers over to Plymouth. And we defined why they came there, and we defined what they wanted when they got there, and we defined what their ideology was and what their philosophy of governing was. We went over the Mayflower Compact, the probably first written document that defined a true government by the people. Led by a governor who was elected by the people. And we left them there off of the Mayflower at the Plymouth Colony near Boston, near present-day Boston. If you can imagine, at the start of a very long and bitter winter, just having come ashore, low on rations, low on morale, but steeped in the idea that they were now their own people. They were now totally and completely responsible for themselves, that they had both all of the right and all of the responsibility to make it or break it in the new world. We're going to come back from the break then, and we're going to pick up right there where we left off, and we're going to follow this group of people from the point where they started that long, hard winter until a point where they had developed into 13 sovereign colonies and were ready to cut the ties with the homeland. So we're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to carry on with Constitution 101. Give us a call, 347-677-183, line 35. I'm sorry, say that again, Dave, 347-677-1835.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
So here we are. We're back now. William Bradford was named midway through the first winter the governor of the Plymouth Colony, and he remained the governor pretty much until his death. He took a little while off in the middle there, about 3 years, right after he married his second wife. Bradford's first wife died in the landing, and they had left. He brought one son ashore with him, and they had left their other juvenile children, their an infant and a young toddler, back in England with friends. So we head into that first winter in 1620. It's cold. It's a bitter cold winter. They have one common house that they built as they came ashore, before they brought the rest of the crew ashore. And there are 94 people. Half of the people died of either sickness or starvation in that first winter. They had no help from the Native Americans, who were plentiful in the area, but who were distrustful of the Europeans. Europeans had, in fact, spent a good deal of time slave trading Native Americans back to England, and so they were quite the Native Americans were quite distrustful of the colonists. They got little or no help there. They rationed their what food they had. They did eat forage and find some meat and some vegetables. Vegetation, anyway, out and around in the countryside, and they did eke their way through that first winter and lost half of their population. So they're down to 42 people when spring breaks in 1621. One of the casualties, as I said, was the governor, John Carver, and he was replaced by William Bradford by a vote of the people. Bradford was a very astute man. He managed to keep the people together through faith. They did establish a small church. The people who had come over, if you'll remember, we talked about, were half Puritans, saints and strangers. So they were about 50% Puritans, and about 50% folks who weren't of the Puritan faith, who were when they left by force members of the Church of England, but weren't totally spiritual, had come over to get away from the burdens of England. Some for gain, some for money gain, because they saw a great prospect for trade back to England from the New World. Some to get away from debt, and the saints, the Puritans had been quite selective, but debt was not an issue. Now, crime, they hadn't brought any criminals or total vagrants with them. That was two disqualifiers. But basically what the saints need, what these 48, 49 Puritans needed, was someone that they could charge stowage to, they could charge passage to on the Mayflower, so that they could pay the bill of getting over. And that's where these folks were. Well, about halfway through that first winter, even the strangers were starting to get some religion. And so the church was founded in Plymouth, and it became very, very strong. And that faith, even in the wake of 50% mortality, kept those settlers going through that first winter. And they came out in the spring on the other side with about 42 people. But in the summer of 1621, the ship Fortune arrived with 95 more people, mostly men of strong character who had left England as part of the Puritan exile, part of the group trying to escape from religious persecution. And with that 95 people, they bolstered up their they beefed up their population, and they began developing quite a lively colony. Meanwhile, about midsummer, the Native Americans came around, having seen that these settlers were different from viewing them, having watched them bury their dead and survive through that winter on meager rations and faith, and seeing that even with the reinforcements coming over, they were no threat to the Native Americans. The Native Americans began helping these settlers of the Plymouth colony to continue to establish and grow and become stronger. They taught them agriculture. They taught them forestry. They taught them fishing and hunting. And by the fall of that first year, 1621, the Pilgrims / Puritans had become quite prosperous. They had great harvests. They had great crops. And what became known as the first Thanksgiving was celebrated in the autumn. And it wasn't quite November the way we know it, because that's winter in Boston. But it was in late August. And it was actually a three-day celebration where it was literally a Thanksgiving. I mean, it was prayer meetings. It was spiritual. It was glory hallelujah. And the Native Americans did participate. The stories that you heard, if you're my age, when you were in elementary school, that the kids in elementary school aren't hearing anymore, were very close to accurate. The Native Americans came and went all during the celebration. They shared in the feast. They brought food. They brought provisions of their own to add to the larders of the Puritans. And things were very good heading into that second winter. The second winter was a darn sight more livable than the first. Now, by 1623, many other ships had arrived, and you're now looking at a colony in the many hundreds. By the winter of 1623, Bradford counted 842 people. About 10 ships had come and gone. Meanwhile, down in Virginia, Jamestown was also beginning to boom as other ships found their way to Virginia. Now, what was going on in Jamestown was nothing spiritual at all in the way of why did people come. People came to Jamestown originally as entrepreneurs, as traders, as folk who had hoped to strike it rich in the New World. There were things here that people in England wanted and that could be traded for quite nicely, and people who were here could get quite rich in that trading. Jamestown, if you'll remember from our last show, had also had a very hard start, but ships were beginning to arrive there, and quite a colony was also developing in Jamestown. Now, what happened in both of these places is that before long, Plymouth / Boston and Jamestown had become religiously as intolerant as what they left behind. In Jamestown, they were pretty much Congregationalist, which was kind of an offshoot of the Church of England. And in Plymouth, of course, they were Puritan. The Salem witch burnings, which were not anything as I think, I believe, and I don't remember, I should have looked this up before tonight's show, but I believe that in the whole period, they actually killed two women. It wasn't nearly the Salem's Lot kind of thing you see going on in the show where, you know, they're having a barbecue a day for these witches. I mean, there was quite a bit of imprisonment. There was quite a bit of persecution. But I believe that there were two actual killings. But anyway, it was just a symptom of what was going on in Puritan New England. You can read these things in novel form in things like The Scarlet Letter and The Crucible and the Salem Witch Trials. And you can read about the intolerance that was beginning to develop. Well, what this did was it drove people, just as it had driven the Puritans out of England, it drove people out of Plymouth to seek refuge in new colonies. And New Hampshire became the first political subdivision where some Anabaptists and some Pentecostals who actually branched off to become modern day Methodists broke off from the Puritans in Boston and formed their own colonies. And those colonies eventually petitioned the king for some sovereignty and became the colony of New Hampshire. Exiles from Massachusetts also settled in Rhode Island, and in 1631, some Dutch and Swiss merchants came over to strike it rich and established Delaware. Meanwhile, and I say meanwhile, you know, we're talking about a stretch of over 40 to 50 years here. Some Dutch had begun arriving in Pennsylvania and had set up another intolerant religious state, Dutch Quakers. New York was settled pretty much just as an expansion of people wanting their own land, wanting their own space. Maryland followed. Down in the South, some England unloaded some penal boats on Georgia, and other merchants who were into cotton and tobacco, which was highly prized in England, came to Georgia, and they branched out seeking more and more acreage for their tobacco and their cotton into North and South Carolina. So, by the turn of the century, you now have 13 well-established colonies, and they are all quite unique. They're all quite jealous of their own sovereignty. Skirmishes are breaking out along the borders, especially of Rhode Island and Massachusetts. And on more than one occasion, several occasions even, the king would have to send people over to settle these skirmishes, which sometimes would become armed conflicts over borders, over trade routes. You can imagine the St. Lawrence Seaway was a highly contested problem. States slash colonies were claiming waterways as their own, were charging tariffs to other colonies or states for the import or the export of goods. And as things went on, as we got closer and closer to the French and Indian War. We even had colonies slash states. They weren't quite states yet. They were still colonies, but the state boundaries were being drawn. The boundaries of the future states were being drawn. Actually entering independently alliances with foreign nations. So that when the French and Indian War came around, you almost had a first American Civil War in that some of the colonies had formed pretty tight alliances with France, and other colonies had formed some pretty tight alliances, and these were all alliances based on trade. See, there was no power here yet. There was no military power in the colonies, but these were alliances based on trade. But they certainly gave way for the pulling of the puppet strings by the master nations, by the nations where the alliances had been formed. After the French and Indian War, of course, those alliances went away, because that's when King George decided, and it was basically his decision to put the iron fist down to start bringing these colonies back under control was very much caused by his realization that some of his colonies were actually forming alliances with Spain and France. And that was a little bothersome to the king. And so he started ruling with more of an iron fist. The other thing that occurred was, of course, he had incurred a lot of debt because of this war, this French and Indian War, and several other skirmishes that he had to become involved in along the American-Canadian border and along the western borders. Because the colonists seemed, as much as they wanted their liberty, they seemed quite willing to call on the good king when they needed some defending. And so he was sitting back there in London saying, these people aren't paying me enough for this. You know, I'm incurring a tremendous amount of cost in transporting troops over to the New World, in fighting these wars, skirmishes. And the French and Indian War was actually quite a large skirmish, probably actually even maybe a war. And so that is when he got the idea that he should extract more capital from his colonies. These were, after all, Britain's lands. They were sovereign to Britain and to no one else. And he defended them, and he took care of them when they needed it. They were British subjects, and by golly, he was going to take care of that situation. So what we have now is 13 colonies, sovereign, and at this point, we're at the turn of the century, willingly sovereign to the king. Willingly sovereign to England, willingly beholden to England, and not at any kind of odds with England. But until this point, the king had not extracted from them anything like what he thought he was due. The king had pretty much left them alone, had left them to their sovereign statehood. And we reach a point right after the turn of the century where the king is now beginning to realize that he's got something really worth holding on to here in the New World. Another very formidable extension of the great British Empire on the shores of America. We're going to take a break because I'm tired of talking right now, and nobody's called us at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about where we go from there.
There's a new war on conservatives, and it's not coming from the liberal left. It's from the establishment Republican Speaker of the House, John Boehner. The battle for conservatism stems in a large part from the removal of conservative-minded representatives Dave Swalick, Justin Amash, and Tim Hulskamp from their spots on committees by Boehner. We cannot allow this to happen, and we need to demand that Boehner reinstate the constitutional patriot conservative House members and put a stop to this nonsense of Republicans eating their own. Boehner has been an absolute failure as Speaker, and this boneheaded move of his is a nail in the coffin for conservatives. It's time for him to go. If we conservatives want to tackle our biggest challenges, we need competent leaders, and frankly, new leaders. Maybe a Speaker Ryan or a Speaker Cantor? If only 16 members of the Republican Party abstain from voting for Boehner as Speaker in January, he will be one vote shy of the 218 votes needed to confirm his speakership. Start contacting your Congress members now and tell them, vote no on Boehner for Speaker. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. I've got a feeling that the
tide is turning. 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Before we go on, I want to make some quick announcements. I talked to you a little bit earlier about what a great time I had listening to Eric Ferris's new show down there in Branson. Now, I've got some exciting news about Missouri Grassroots Radio. We've closed a couple of deals this week, and we're going to actually start populating our Tuesday night time slots. Cindy McGee is going to come along from 6 to 7 on Tuesdays. Beginning in the near future, and then after the first of the year, I've got some really exciting news from on Tuesday night in that 7 to 9 time slot. Cynthia Davis is going to pick that up. I'm talking to Cynthia here again this week, so I don't know what the name of her show or the general direction of Cynthia's show is going to be. And Lisa is dealing with Cindy McGee. She may have some more details on Wednesday night on the Culture Vigilante of where that is going. So we're looking forward to Tuesday nights beginning right soon with Cindy and after the first of the year, which is really soon, with Cynthia Davis, the First Lady of the Constitution. That's going to be really, really exciting, and I'm looking forward to that. We have some other additions coming along in the near future, so stay tuned for some. We're going to have this whole week on Missouri Grassroots Radio filled up pretty soon with hardcore patriots. On Thursday night, do not forget that Kevin Harned, the great hillbilly himself, comes along. What a great show last week Kevin had. I mean, I was impressed. I have absolutely no idea how he and Lisa pull down the star power they pull down on these shows. I can't do it. I'm just out here kind of wagging on my own and making a fool out of myself most of the time. These guys are pulling down some real star power and guest appearances. So yeah, catch the Hillbilly Logic show on Thursday night and just be amazed at who he gets coming along to share the libertarian point of view. Kevin is quite the libertarian and very, very much a small government guy. And then on Friday nights, we're going to continue with the roundtable. I believe, and that'll be something exciting and something we can look forward to, at least for the foreseeable future, on Friday nights at 7 to 9. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is where you want to go if you have a liberty-minded group that wants to be part of the overall strategy of taking back the state government. If you want to be part of a group of a cooperative effort to recognize that if we are going to win this thing back, that we're going to do it from the precinct level, the county level, the township level, and the state level, all the way from county precinct chairs to county commissions, to city councils, county councils, state legislatures, state executive branches. This is where the action is going to be in the short term to win this whole thing back. We're not going to get it done from the top down. If you don't believe me, just look back at this last joke of a national election. If you're a Republican, you mourn the loss of your party. If you're a constitutionalist, you've been mourning the loss of the Constitution for some time. If you're a libertarian, you've been moaning for half a century now about the way the government has been taking over your life from both the right and from the left. So we're just not going to be heard in Washington, D.C. until we start doing something at ground level. As I say, we had a very good talk here on this show on Friday night and last Monday night with Eric Ferris, who had a whole an entire 2-hour show dedicated to the secession movement. We're going to try to get Lloyd Sloan back again in the near future to talk about some other things that we can do locally. The state's rights amendment, the state repeal amendment, SRA. Interesting. And then there's nullification being talked about all over the place. So there are lots of different tools in the toolbox that we can use locally to push back at the federal government. And when we get a sufficient number of states doing that, then and only then will we have any hope of fixing what's going on in Washington, D.C. So that was the long way of saying that Missouri Grassroots Coalition is your tool to help get that done. If you have a local, liberty-minded, constitutionally-minded group, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and join Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It is not just another group to join, okay? There's no board of governors. There's no rules. There is a mission. There is a values statement. There is a mission statement. And that's all there is. And the mission statement is simply to educate, to act, to take back our state government. And the values are few. They are fair taxation, personal responsibility, fiscal order, and constitutional government. Now, if your group can come to the table with those four things, fair taxation, personal responsibility, fiscal order, and limited constitutional government, then you fit in at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Nobody wants to take over your group. Nobody wants to tell your group that they can't be pro-choice or pro-life, that they can't be pro-gay or anti-gay, that they can't be pacifists or hawks. None of that has anything to do with the four basic things you need to bring to the table at Missouri Grassroots Coalition: small, limited constitutional government, fair taxation, fiscal restraint, and personal responsibility. So your group could be a gun group. It could be a right to life group. It could be a anything group, as far as we're concerned. If you come to the table on those four issues, you belong in Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And Missouri Grassroots Coalition is nothing more than a cooperative of all the groups that want to be part of this, teaming together for one common goal, to have one solid voice in Jefferson City, Missouri, and in your county, state, township, precinct, whatever it is. So the beauty of Missouri Grassroots Coalition is that it works up and downhill. You lend your voice to the voice of Missouri patriots, sending a message to Jefferson City that we are watching what you do, that we are holding you accountable, that we want fiscal restraint, we want fair taxation, we want a limited constitutional government, and we want personal responsibility. We want some state sovereignty. And in addition to that, when you need some help in your county, precinct, city, you come to Missouri Grassroots Coalition and to all of your friends and allies, and you say, we've got a problem down here in Hollister, Missouri. They're trying – look at what they're trying to do with a daytime curfew for kids. And you can get 1,000 or 2,000 emails to the city council. And we can get things done. I say the Hollister daytime curfew because that's a perfect recent example of where a large group of Missourians emailed and called and got a city council to say, oh my God, we're being looked at by everybody in this state. We better compare what we're trying to do here to liberty and the Constitution, because we could get in some trouble. So take your group to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Join the network. There's all kinds of you can go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page. You can get all kinds of alerts. You can get all kinds of – I mean, when your friends out there need help, when there's something going on in the State House that you need to respond to or react to or just know about. When there's something going on in state education that you need to react to or just to know about, when there's something going on in any one of your neighborhood counties that you need to know about or react to. While you're at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, do yourself and us a favor, and in the top right-hand corner, click on the Secret Santa button. Now, Secret Santa is a thing that we started here last year at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal and heartwarming for those who were the receivers. And listen, it was heartwarming and phenomenal for those who were the donors, the players in this. And that could be you. What we do is we take your donation 100%. And we go to a store on Christmas Eve when we're sure that anything we find is going to still be sitting there the day after Christmas. And we go to the layaway department and we say, give us one or two, depending on the price involved, layaways that are behind in payments, that aren't going to be paid off, that that have toys in them. And we pay them off, and we have the store manager call those parents and say, come get your toys. Some Secret Santa has come in here and paid off your layaway, and so your kids can have these toys for Christmas morning that you weren't going to be able to get out. Wow, that's quite a deal. Click on that Secret Santa button, listen, and send us two or three or four or five or 10 or 100 or $200, whatever you can afford. We'll take a dollar. We'll take $2. It all will go to this Secret Santa. Now, we'll be coming along in our shows the next week after Christmas, and we'll be telling you what we spent where. Not because there's any feather in our cap kind of thing associated with, but we've been doing this. We've been collecting this money since February. We've been telling you four times a week that 100% of the money is going to go to this charity, that there's no overhead, that there's no salaries, there's no expense, 100% of every penny you get. So as part of our accountability to you, we're going to come and let you know where your money went. And what you did with your money, so that in February of 2013, we can start over again, working toward Christmas of 2013, and know that you understand that every penny you sent to the Secret Santa by going to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and checking on the Secret Santa button was used to pay for these layaways for needy children and families on Christmas morning. Do it. It's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. In the top menu, there's a Secret Santa button. Click on it. Click on the PayPal button when you get there and send a couple of bucks. Will you please? We'd appreciate it. And I guarantee you, some less fortunate than you family in the state of Missouri will appreciate it a whole lot. A whole lot. 347-677-1835. Okay, so now we've got these colonies spread out into 13 subdivisions. We've got what's soon going to be the state lines, state borders, pretty well drawn. And we're going to leave it there tonight. And what I want to do as I leave it there is go back to why we're doing this. Why are we doing all the American history part of this? If you were late tuning in, we picked up where we left off with the Plymouth Colony and the Jamestown Colony. We started spreading that out sometimes from flight from Plymouth and Jamestown for religious persecution purposes. Again, both of those colonies had established their own church, and anyone who wasn't in the church of the colony was quite, I mean, they didn't kill people or imprison people, but you know, it was hard to do business. You were, in fact, persecuted if you weren't in the quote-unquote church of the colony. And so, initially, for reasons of religious persecution, people started fleeing Plymouth and Jamestown and establishing colonies in other places. More ships were arriving. People who were different, Dutch Quakers, for example, non-spiritual merchants and entrepreneurs looking to establish, to get rich in the New World. And I don't want to say that they were non-spiritual because they were looking to get rich. Believe me, many of the spiritual people who came over here were darn sure looking to get rich. Agriculturists in the South who looked at the lucrative trade back home to Europe with tobacco, especially, and cotton, convincingly, and so some of this spreading out was just for more room, for more land, for the sake of expansion, for those wide open spaces. Some of it was because groups were culturally different. You know, the Dutch and the Swiss who were coming over were slightly culturally different than those who had settled in Plymouth and Jamestown. So for various reasons, we spread out, and what became the borders of the soon-to-be 13 states were drawn. That's where we went today, and now it's important to, as we wrap up tonight's show, to go back and redefine why we go through this elaborate process of defining the real American history in a series that we call Constitution 101. And it is because of this. You just can't wrap your arms around what we're going to get to here in several weeks of what the Constitution was and why it was what it was until you wrap your arms around who these people were and what they believed and why they believed it. You know, we bandy the word liberty around a lot nowadays. Liberty this, liberty that, patriot this, patriot that, freedom this, freedom that. And we don't have anyone alive today. I don't care how old you are. If you are alive today, you have not experienced liberty. If you are alive today, you have not experienced freedom. If you are alive today, you didn't know anyone in your family as far back as you can remember. Your grandparents or great-grandparents, if you knew them, who lived in a free market economy. So it's important that we not try to frame the Constitution by looking back in history, but that we try to frame the Constitution and what it was and what liberty is and what freedom is and what free market is by tracking it forward and defining the people who sculpted that Constitution, what their roots were, what their fears were, what their hopes were and their dreams. And I say that because we'll find that the Constitution was pretty much a document crafted as much by the fears of these people as by their hopes and dreams. We'll pick up here next time, and we'll take these 13 colonies through the persecutions of the king. Where we left off tonight, if you're just now tuning in, is the king had just awakened to the fact that he had a real gold mine here in the New World. He had pretty much just let these people go and forgotten about them. Now he'd had to come over here a couple of times and bail them out of a military jam. He started looking around and seeing that these people were thriving. And he said, geez, those are my people. That's my land. Those are my colonies. That's Great Britain. Some of these colonies had been impertinent enough to even form some alliances with Spain and France. And that got under his wig a little bit. So we left off at near the turn of the century, where the king is just now beginning to realize that he's got a gold mine that he can start harvesting, and that it's time. It's time to capitalize on his investment. So we're going to next time go through the persecutions of the king. We're going to detail some few of them, a few of them that were really extreme enough to cause serious tension. And we're going to get to the point where the colonists finally say, that's it. We're done with England. We're going to be free of them completely. That's the Declaration of Independence. And we're going to take ourselves there in the next session. It's a long road to get from 13 subdivided sovereign colonies to a point where these people say, that's it, King George, we're done with you. and we'll fight if we have to make that happen. This is still long before, years before, they realize that they need a first instrument to kind of bring them together into a formidable confederation of states. But it is the point where they said, okay, we are a sovereign people and we don't need you anymore. We're going to go there next time. I'm going to come back in just a minute and we're going to make some announcements and then we're going to call it a night.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.